Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding themselves, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I am your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have a special interview with Tony Pearson, 1978 Mr. America winner, and then he went on to NABBA and he won the Mr. Universe over there. And then eventually Tony went over to the IFBB and became one of the most popular pros in the 1980s. So we've got Tony on the show. I got a chance to run into him in Las Vegas at the Mr. Olympia Expo, and I never really met him before in person, so it was great to meet him. Tony is 62 years old, and he's in fantastic shape. This guy's always ripped. And he just wrote a book, and it's called Driven, and it is now available on Amazon in either Kindle form or softcover. And I bought the book and I read it before we did our interview. And it's a really fascinating book because Tony talks about the abuse that he suffered as a child, which I never knew about. And he also talks about his whole life, including all the contests he went into. It's a really, really fascinating book. I recommend it if you guys want to, if you're into biographies of different bodybuilders. This is a really, really good one. I was able to finish the whole 300-page book in like 4 days. It's a real page turner. So anyways, in this part of the interview today, we are going to talk to Tony about his childhood and about how he was growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, and he was raised by his aunt when he was 3 years old, and then they eventually moved to St. Louis, and he got a chance to train at George Turner's gym, and that's what really introduced him to bodybuilding when he was still a teenager. And then Tony took a chance and moved to California, I think when he was 19 years old, just to make it in bodybuilding. It was crazy when you think about it now. He had hardly any money, no contacts out there. And Tony went on to win the Mr. America contest at only 21 years old in 1978. And he was a real surprise winner. The contest favorite was Ron Tufel. So we are going to talk to Tony about all of that stuff today. And that's where our interview ends today. And then part two will pick up next week. But yeah, you definitely want to stick around for this interview with Tony Pearson, 1978 Mr. America. That'll be coming up in a second. All right, before we get to that, though, I do want to mention our sponsor was Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn. It's the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse that's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So just use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. And if you guys do shop on Old School Labs, they have a really good joint supplement that I recommend. I've been taking that since I started training again. And also have a really good creatine supplement also that's on board there. So you want to check that out when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Yeah, speaking of my training, I got back to my regular training with weights and exercises that I normally do. And I started that this week and I went really light, didn't push myself at all. I figured my strength's going to go up gradually every week. So it was really great to get back into the gym and start lifting some real weights. The last couple of weeks, I've just been doing light stuff on the machines. So I don't even count that. So it feels great, man, to be in the gym again. I went really light on legs and my legs are so sore. So it's going to take a while to get over the soreness and just break it in gradually, but it's glad to be back. It's been 8 weeks already since my hernia. I know it seems like yesterday. For me, it does. I am glad to be back, and I'm on my diet now. I got rid of the cookies, so I am going to get back in shape and hopefully look really, really good for my birthday, which will be next March. Just lose the fat slow and then start building up more strength and size. All right. Our interview with Jeff King last week was really good, and we got some good responses. Let me read the emails that we got on my Facebook page first. New Jersey Rich said, Jeff was a beast. And David Shepard asked, will this be on YouTube as well, John? Yes, I will try to get it on YouTube. I did get some pictures from one of my friends on the internet, and we got some good shots of Jeff King when he was younger. So I'm going to try and put all those together over the audio, and we'll put it on his YouTube. Tom Terwilliger said, Jeff King had one of the most impressive, most muscular poses ever. I mean, just look at that neck. Cliff Kuhn said, John, if you would, please tell Jeff I said hi. And then Cliff also said, Jeff had better legs than Platt's. The reason being they were on a taller frame, which increased their shape and long lines. Jerry Scalise said, another great interview, John. And Larry Bernstein chimed in. And Larry was the one who got Jeff King to do the interview with me. So thank you to Larry for that. And Larry said, hey, Jerry, thanks to you getting me back in touch. And to John also for putting the show together. Richard Baldwin said, another great interview, John. Cliff Kuhns also said, I spent a lot of time training at the same time as Jeff at Turner's Gym in the early 80s. One of the things that amazed me was how tiny his knees and ankles were, which made his calves and thighs look even bigger. Also, another amazing thing was how far over his knees his quads went, a good couple of inches or so. Jeff trained medium heavy for a big guy, would time his rest periods between sets with a watch. I have to say, I couldn't get him to train with me, as he always said, nah, you're too crazy. Great guy, Jeff. Very intelligent and clean-cut guy. Chuck Zamzow said, awesome. Sean LeBrun said, John Hansen, I would love to hear Jeff Willett or Skip LaCour on the show. These two men are some of the best naturals ever to do it. Yes, that's true, Sean, but we're trying to stick with the bodybuilding legends, which is the guys from 60s, 70s, 80s, maybe even the 90s. We're not really talking to natural bodybuilders, but those guys are both great. Jeff and Skip, I know them both. Adrian Johnson said, cool, he had some mass, mate. Brian Dunham said, your list keeps getting better. Fantastic interview, John. Kevin Noble, my friend from Rockford, Illinois, said, great interview, John. Had Jeff do a seminar for me at Champions Gym in Rockford in the 80s, the day after he guest posed at the Central USA show in Elgin. Really nice guy, awesome physique, he had it all. Kevin was a great promoter out in the Chicago area. I've known Kevin since I was a teenager, because he used to promote the Mr. Midwest contest in Rockford, Illinois, which is about 2 hours north of Chicago. And Kevin promoted a teenage Mr. Midwest also with that Mr. Midwest contest. And I competed in that a couple times. So I've known Kevin a long time. He's one of the best judges I've ever met. So good to hear from him. Terry Strand said, I just listened to your Jeff King interview. How far we've come now with podcasts. 20 years ago, we had to be satisfied with magazine interviews, which gave no flavor or of the interviewee. But these hour-plus conversations are absolutely the best. Thank you for spearheading and archiving talks with the champs. And then David Harrington also said, well done. Great interview, John. And then I did get a couple emails from some new listeners, so I want to read these. John Hartman said, John, thanks for all the work you do to create the podcast. I listened to several other various topics, including racing, MMA, etc., and yours is my favorite. Learning about the greats has been and is fun and entertaining. I have so many questions for you. I'll ask just one to start. What's your take on testosterone replacement therapy, and does it make a guy using it not natural? If I can ask, is this something you would take or consider taking, managed by your primary care physician, of course? I am 43 years old. I started on it a couple of years back after going to the doctor feeling crummy. So we spent the better part of a year getting me dialed in. Wow, the results have been fantastic. Sleeping better, never feel down. I'm always ready to hit the gym. And best of all, if I put in the work, rest, and get the proper nutrition, I get results. All right. Yes, John, I also believe in hormone replacement therapy. I've been doing it for the last couple of years. Let's see, I'm 56. So I think I started when I was 54, and my own natural testosterone was low. So I started taking 100 milligrams a week with our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. So yeah, I really, really like it. Does it make you not natural? I think so, if you're competing, because in competition, you're not supposed to be taking anything, although I don't know if they would have a test to detect that. Probably not, especially if your levels are normal. So I think what they do is they test for extremely high normal levels of testosterone. So if you're if your levels were in the normal range, you probably wouldn't get detected taking it, but I don't know if it's fair to take it with other natural bodybuilders. I'm not really sure. I'm sure all the different natural organizations have rules for that. But yes, I definitely do enjoy it. I feel great also. And my strength is up. My muscle mass is up. I just feel like I'm normal, like where I should be. So I definitely recommend it as well. I also got an email here from Steven, and he said, good evening. I recently stumbled upon your podcast series, Pure Gold. I love listening to Boyer Co. talk about Arthur Jones. Thank you for doing these podcasts. I've been a fan of bodybuilding since my early teens in the early 1980s. And that was from Steven. So thank you for listening to the show, Steven. I'm glad you discovered it as well. And speaking of Jeff King, when we get done with our interview today with Tony Pearson, part one of our interview with Tony Pearson, I'm going to read an article from another old Iron Man magazine. This is from the July 1984 issue. John Torelli was on the cover doing a great lat spread. And they have an article in here called Jeff King, Mr. America Tells How He Did It, which is perfect after following up with the Jeff King interview we did last week. So I'm going to read that as soon as our interview with Tony Pearson is finished. All right. And before we get to that interview with Tony, let's also mention Florida Alternative Medicine, who I just talked about, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. And please mention that you heard the show on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and Florida Alternative Medicine will give you a free consultation. Plus, they will also give you 20% off your order. So that's free money. All right, so here's our interview with Tony Pearson, where we talk about his upbringing all the way up until when he won the Mr. America contest in 1978. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends show, and I have a very special guest with us this week. His name is Mr. Tony Pearson, and Tony was the 1978 Mr. America. There we go. He's still got the guns at 62. How you doing, Tony?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
All right, great. Great to have you on the show, finally.
Thank you.
Well, Tony, you've just written a new book, and it's called Driven, and it's available now on Amazon.com, and it's in Kindle form. It's also in paperback, and I just read the book. It's an excellent book. It goes into your story. Your subtitle is My Secret Untold Story, and you go into your whole life, and this is a story I never knew existed, Tony. I've known about you since the 70s. I think when you won the Junior Mr. USA, I think that was the first time I heard of you back in 78. So I never knew that you had this background and went through all this. So I want to talk about that with you in addition to your whole contest history.
Okay. Yeah, it starts back before I was even born, my mom and dad, the book. And it just tells the story that how I grew up in the deep south in Tennessee, in the woods. And I was severely tortured.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah.
How I fought my way through that, and the whole, it's a healing process for me, because I was very depressed a couple of years ago, and my friend says, why don't you just write this stuff down, put it on paper to help you get release some of this angst and depression. So I started writing, and the last 2.5 years I've been writing and writing and writing. So I finally got the book done, and then I said, well, I can't be the only one that's depressed and got issues. That's hiding the secret. And that's why I said secret, because it's all hidden away. We all have a nice front.
Yeah.
But it's not the truth.
Yeah.
I'm speaking my truth through the book, and I hope this book can help some people, especially teenagers and young adults. And, you know, the suicide rate today is the highest ever.
Yeah.
And it's because these kids are lost. They have no direction. They're ashamed. They're embarrassed. They can't tell anybody. So by reading my story, I hope that it to inspire them a little bit. You know, to change, that you can make it, and that you can do it without drugs, that you can do it without being in jail, and you can be normal, somewhat normal. I'm not angry with the world. I can't change the past. I couldn't choose my mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
That happens. I mean, you can't, if I could pick my mom and dad, I would have a ton of Hollywood movie stars.
Yeah, right.
And Beverly Hills and Bel Air.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But I was in the woods in Tennessee.
Right. Yeah, it's so true. And you say that in the book, that you wrote this book so other people will tell their story. And that was really inspiring to me, was that you went through all this and it seemed like you never felt sorry for yourself. You just kept forging forward and moving ahead, and then you accomplished all these things. And, you know, we'll get to that part about when you went to California to be a bodybuilder and stuff. But
right.
It was just really amazing how you didn't really go through a depression. Well, maybe you did later in life, but at the time you just kept forging forward and moving, and you never felt sorry for yourself. And I think that happens with a lot of people, who they go through similar circumstances where things happen to them, some kind of trauma happens to them, and they turn to drugs or alcohol or, God forbid, suicide, as you said, you know.
Right. To escape the pain.
Yeah, yeah.
And they say, why me? Why me? I was so determined to live. So my fight to live started at 3 years old, and you'll see in the book, from that point forward, I was never a child again. I never had a childhood.
Right.
I never had a friend. I never had a friend as a child.
Yeah.
So and you live in your own mind.
Yeah.
And as an adult, I've tried to erase it. I've tried to block it out, and I can't erase it. It, you know, it's there, but I can't change it. I realize I can't change it. I have to live for today and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I got forward. I can't look back.
Yeah.
If I could change it, I would, you know. I would erase it out of my head.
Sure.
But you got to just keep believing in yourself. You got to believe in yourself that I can do this. No one can stop me from doing this. I am somebody. And just keep fighting.
Yeah.
You never fighting. So for all those young people out there, you know, at that age, that tender age, you know, they're insecure about themselves. They don't have confidence. And then they get picked on at school. All in bad situation at home. All these things add up, and they just, you know, they can't handle it.
Yeah. So let's start from the beginning, Tony. You were born in 1957, and you were born in Tennessee, right?
Memphis, Tennessee, yeah.
Yeah.
Country boy, yes, and I'm still that country boy.
Right.
So you never forget where you came from.
Yeah.
Once you remember that. Now, you can go to Hollywood, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if I could that's how it all started, and I don't want to give the book away, but I want you to read it. And
yeah,
they said it's pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
I kind of go really in detail and give you the raw side of it. I'm not sugarcoating anything. Just
tell
them that's what happened. So
yeah, not to give anything away, but as you said, you came from a pretty abusive family.
Yes,
and you had, I believe, four sisters, right? And then you were the youngest.
Yeah, two sisters and a brother.
Oh,
brother.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you were the baby, right?
I was the baby,
yeah.
And very, very poor. Can't get any poor. So, but that's, in my mind, that's how everybody lived. That's all
yeah.
I knew.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel sorry for myself. Even when I got to California, I never felt sorry for myself. I felt stronger. I felt more determined to do something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, me and a survivor. I wanted to survive.
Right.
How can I survive? Whatever I need to do to survive. And that's where the bodybuilding came in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I joined a wrestling team back in St. Louis, and that was a great boost for me. You know, I don't want to mention his name, but it's a big famous boxer I met, and he inspired me to go work out. And, you know, we was too poor to go to a gym and to work out. I never did sports, nothing.
Yeah.
And I champion in person. And I went, oh, my God, champion of the world. I got to go work out. I got to do something.
Yeah.
I can't box. I can't play football. I'm too slow. But I was very strong. And as you can see in the book, what I was doing as a child, I got very strong from doing it.
Right.
So, yeah, exactly. So I went to the wrestling team. I made the wrestling team, and I tore up my knee. So the doctor said, go to the gym and rehab it yourself. In 1974 – there was no rehab centers, so
right.
I went high school weight room, and I started lifting, you know, 10 pounds on that bad leg, and every day I would go there.
Yeah.
And then it became a habit. It became fun. And there was other guys working out in there and said, well, how much can you bench? I don't know. How can you leg press? I don't know. So every day was a challenge match with these guys.
Yeah.
So after about 8 weeks, I grew. I started putting some size on genetically, I guess, and my wrestling coach came in. He goes, okay, you want to go to a real gym? And I go, yeah. You know, like a kid, 18 years old. So that's how we met up with, you know, who.
Yeah. Well, let me take you back before we get into that, Tony. You grew up, like you said, in Memphis, Tennessee, and right. Your aunt basically raised you, right? When you were, I think, 3 years old, right?
My great aunt.
Great aunt, okay.
Great aunt, yes, and extremely poor. And at the age, she was very old at the time. So she drank and was just every odd you can think of.
Yeah. And you guys were living in the woods, right? You had like she had a shack in the woods.
Yeah, completely in the woods. Yes. There was no electricity, no plumbing.
Wow. It was a very tough childhood. And what struck me, too, not only was how she raised you, which was very abusive, but also you had no other kids to play with. You had no other, like you didn't have your brothers and sisters around. So you were by yourself and you were being raised with no other kids or no other, you didn't even have anybody to talk to.
No one to talk to. And I wasn't allowed to have friends. So
yeah, that's unbelievable.
You go to school, you come straight home, you go to church, you go to the market, and that was it. I mean, it was like prison.
Yeah.
You know, and she had people watching me. She always had other people watching to see what I was doing to report to her. So it's,
wow. Yeah.
To me, I call it prison. I still have recurring nightmares about it. And I got the call with wake cold sweats every night.
I'll bet, yeah.
For years.
Yeah. And she wouldn't even feed you sometimes, right? She wouldn't even, like, give you breakfast or?
One meal a day.
Oh, man.
If lucky.
Yeah. So how was it when you started going away to school, like when you were in grade school? How was that experience? That had to be tough too.
It was very tough at the beginning because I didn't know how to communicate.
Yeah.
Talk to the kids or the teachers. Or I was just extremely shy. You couldn't get two words out of me.
Yeah.
When I came to California, I mean, you know, I didn't talk very much.
Yeah.
If you look at pictures from those days, I never smiled.
Yeah, wow.
There was nothing to smile about.
Right, right.
Where I came from. So, yeah, I was very quiet, and I would just sit there and just listen, you know. So it took me a long time to communicate with the kids, to adjust. And then it became fun. It was kind of fun to be around other kids. You know, they would play, go to the playground.
Yeah.
I loved playing basketball. You had an hour break in school. You can go outside and play.
Yeah.
So I would shoot basketball every day, and I loved that part. So, yeah, and I made friends.
Yeah. So like how did you finally get away from that? How did you finally get away from this abusive childhood that you had and this upbringing that you had?
Well, not giving the book away, but the police had to come and rescue me.
And how old were you then, Tony?
I was 13, 14. Yeah.
Okay.
So from age 3 until about 13, 14 is all this was happening. And
wow.
My counselor at school, they said, they thought I was suicidal, which I was. And they said, well,
they can see that just from how you were acting in school.
Yeah, because I was just in Zionville. I would stare out the window. I wasn't communicating. I was just existing.
Yeah. And you never told anyone this when you were in school, right? You never told anybody what was happening.
I remember the day I told my counselor that I had to tell him what was going on. And
right.
I was terrified. I'm sure you read about that part.
Yeah, yeah.
What was going to happen to me if she found out?
Yeah, because you were terrified of your aunt. She was a tough lady.
Oh, man, yeah, very much so. And a couple of weeks later, the police knocked on the door. And they made sure I got my things, and they took me away.
Yeah.
So I ended up in a group home, which is another environment altogether.
Right. You probably thought you were happy to get away from your aunt, and you ended up in a group home.
I ended up boxing every night.
Oh, wow.
You know, 35 teenagers, you know, boys and a lot of them from the streets, tough kids.
Yeah,
committing crimes. Now I'm in the mix with this.
Right, you're in a house with a bunch of criminals, basically.
Right. So their favorite thing to do in the middle of the night is box each other, fight. So every night I'm trying to defend myself, and I had a little bit of muscle, so they picked on me even more. So you think you're bad? I'm going to show you.
Right.
So I got beat up a few times. I punched a few guys, but
jeez.
So from there, I went to a foster home.
Okay.
So, yeah, my best friend said, my mom will adopt you. So I was adopted. That lasted about a couple of years. And after that point, I said, I'm going to California.
So when your friend got you out of that group home his mother adopted you, basically, then things finally started to get better. Then you were finally started to have a better life.
Yes, yes, yes. It started to turn around a little bit. I mean, George was a big influence, and she was much better than the situation I was in.
Yeah.
So after a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. You decided to do athletics then. You started going to sports in school, and you chose to do wrestling, right? What made you want to do that?
Because I saw the world champion, boxing champion of the world.
Uh-huh.
Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
Face to face.
You saw him in person.
Yes. So he got out of the limo. He's dressed in a blue suit. You know, it's like big as I've never seen someone so big.
Yeah.
And I'm looking up at this guy. Oh, my God. To see him on television is one thing, but see him in person.
Right.
1973, 74, he was the champ.
Yeah, yeah.
So that inspired me to get involved in sports. I got to do something. I don't know what. And my friend says, you're really strong. You should go out and try for the wrestling team. Yeah, that's a great idea. So made the team, not very good, because to be a great wrestler, you have to start when you're four.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not when you're 13.
Yeah.
So the kids who are the freshmen, you know, kick your butt all day because they've been wrestling for 10 years already.
Right, right. But you had this upbringing where you were basically raised in the woods, so you had this natural strength, you said, right?
Yeah, it's because of what I was doing, the type of work she had me doing. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, you're working from sunrise to sunset. So.
Gee, unbelievable. Yeah, I thought that was amazing that you just by chance, out of nowhere, you meet Muhammad Ali. I mean, they say that, you know, life sets us up with these certain circumstances, and,
yes.
You know, it's like our destiny is forged by that, you know, and yes. I really think that was a defining moment in your life.
It really was. And I wrote about that, and I believe that. So many moments in that book, I don't know if you read it,
yeah,
that you couldn't plan it, you couldn't orchestrate it, you know, Hollywood couldn't create it. It just happened at that moment.
Yeah.
It was a very tough moment for me as well. I was like, it's do or die situations.
Yeah, yeah.
Do or die situations, and the right thing came at the right time.
Yeah.
I go, God, why you get me to the edge? I ran on the edge. And the speech out says, okay, I'll save you.
Yeah.
But so many times this happened. Ali was one. And then a couple of things in L.A. happened. I had 50 cents in my pocket. 50 cents left in my pocket. I came to L.A. with $75 and a one ticket because I had no intentions of going back. I said, I'm not coming back.
Right.
I said, live and die in L.A. That was my motto, live and die in L.A. So my friend packed his bag, called home, and he went home. I had, you know, my buddy,
uh-huh.
And here I am alone in L.A., and that is the best, the worst fear you could ever feel.
Yeah.
I'm downtown L.A. alone with about $9 left in my pocket. So, yeah, that's the fear I felt because reality kicked in.
Right.
You know, when you sit back in St. Louis, you're dreaming, I'm going to go to California with your pro bodybuilder, and it's going to be beautiful. California and television look like, you know, the land of honey.
Right, right.
No one works out there, just beautiful. Yeah. But so reality.
How did you get from Tennessee to St. Louis? What age was that? When did that happen?
I think I was 12.
Okay.
12, maybe 13. My great auntie's daughter lived in St. Louis, and she asked her to move up. And I said, oh, and she said, okay. So that's how we got to St. Louis.
Was life better for you when you got to St. Louis?
No.
No? Okay.
You read about that. No, no, no. That got worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. The older I got, the more the abuse became because she felt she was losing a bit of control.
Oh, okay.
You know, you say, oh, you think you're a man now. You think you're growing up. Now I'll show you.
Yeah.
Steal the boss.
And there were a few times when you tried to run away and she caught you, right?
She would stalk you down. I mean, you'd get away for about 2 or 3 days and she would find out because she had people watching where you, and she would come get you.
Yeah, unbelievable.
That happened about 3 or 4 times, so, yeah.
Jeez. So what finally got you into bodybuilding then? The wrestling career, you had an injury, right?
Yeah, I messed up, I blew my knee out, and I was rehabbing the knee in my high school weight room every day.
Okay.
And my coach, wrestling coach, came in one day and looks at me and goes, wow, you put some muscle on. You look, you know, your chest and your arms are growing a little bit. He goes, you want to go to a real gym? And I go, I'm going tomorrow. I go, yeah, I can't wait to go. So I go to George Turner's gym.
In St. Louis, yeah.
Clayton, Missouri, yes.
Okay.
And it was brand new. It just opened. It was huge.
Wow.
And I worked out for 3 hours. I did every body part.
Now, did you know anything about bodybuilding at all, Tony, back then?
No. I was just lifting, you know.
Lifting weights, right.
Yeah, for 3 hours. And it's like candy for a kid. That's how I felt. Lifting weight was so much fun.
Yeah, right.
So after 3 hours, because George was watching me the whole time, so he comes over to me. He says, what the fuck do you think you're doing? Get in my office. So I ran into George's office. I was terrified. What is he going to do now? What did I do? What did I do wrong?
Right.
Because I'm going to train you. Be here tomorrow at 6 p.m. Don't be late. Get the hell out of here. So that's George. I don't want to give the book away. That's George.
So. Right. Yeah, so for those that don't know, George Turner was a legendary gym owner and trainer, and he trained a lot of champions.
Yes,
and
he did.
In the St. Louis, Missouri area. And
right.
He was just a no-nonsense, old-school kind of hardcore guy, right?
Yes, basic training and
right.
ex-Marine, I think. And he's very serious about it. He loved the sport, and he helped a lot of people. He was tough, but, you know, he helped a lot of people out. So he took me on his wings, and I grew some legs, squatting like crazy.
Yeah, he had you doing, I think you said, 10 sets of squats 3 days a week? 10 sets of 10, right?
10 sets of 10, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Jeez. And you were 16 years old.
Yes, I weighed about 150 pounds, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and I was squatting 400 pounds.
Wow. You got up to 400 pounds as a teenager.
Yeah. I was very strong.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing, you know, moving trees since I was lifting stuff since I was three, so.
Do you think George saw the potential in you? Because this was a guy who was around. He was a great coach, and he could see potential in bodybuilders.
Yes, I think he was in his office. He had this office, he had an intercom system. He'd sit there and he'd watch people.
Yeah.
He'd throw you out. If you bang the weights together, you drop the weights, you're going to throw you out. You're going to throw you out the gym. So I think he was watching me for 3 hours and he got sick of it. This kid, it's a waste of time. So I think he saw something that I didn't see.
Yeah.
But like I said, I was enjoying myself. I was just having fun.
Mm-hmm.
The chest and the arms, how much can I lift?
Yeah.
Was
he the one that gave you the idea to start competing?
Yes. He said, I'm going to, you know, back in those days in St. Louis, it was weightlifting, it was powerlifting.
Okay.
You know, into squat and dead. And that was the main thing. But the bodybuilding, like at the end of the weightlifting, we're going to put on a little bodybuilding show at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, I'm going to put you in the Mr. Missouri and then the Mr. St. Louis contest.
Okay.
So the first one got me on the stage. And the first time he said, pose for me. The whole gym stops. They're watching me. And I hit the double bicep pose. And he goes, my grandmother can pose better than that. So I'm embarrassed. So so I had to come up with a routine. And I got on stage. I placed, you know, I did okay. I won't let them read about it. I did okay in the shows.
Yeah.
But I was hooked. And then ABC Wide World of Sports came on. 74, 75, 76. And who was I watching? Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, yeah.
Battling out against Franco.
Right.
So Muhammad Mikawi, I saw. Who else? Danny Padilla.
Yeah, in the 76 universe, right?
Right, yes. Yeah. I'm sitting and watching these guys. This guy named Wilford Sylvester. I don't know if you've heard of Wilford.
Yeah, remember Wilford, yeah.
Yes, I would never forget the name. And I'm sitting and going, oh, my God, bodybuilder, wow.
Yeah.
And to me, as a kid, to me, I saw bodybuilding as an art. Yes, they had big muscles and it was beautiful, but I saw the art side of it. It was artistic, posing with the light effect. And I go, that's what I want to do. I want to be an artist.
Okay.
Sculpt myself. So that's what hooked me in.
Yeah, and some of the younger viewers here may not realize, but bodybuilding back then, it was shown as a sport. It was very respectable because it was on Why World of Sports with all these other sports. And they would show the Mr. Universe, the Mr. Olympia. So there had to be a certain amount of prestige to it. You had to look at that and say, wow, I want to get into something like this.
Yes. And that was my introduction. I saw Arnold and all these guys on TV. And that stuck in my head going to California. You got to be in California.
Yeah.
You know, when you're back in St. Louis and Memphis, Tennessee in those days, come on, you got to go to California.
Right, right.
And then the music on the radio was always talking about the Mamas and the Papas, California Dreaming, and all these things about California.
Right.
And I was so hooked on that. Wow, man, I got to go to California.
Yeah. What was it like doing your first contest, Tony? What was that like? Because you were still a teenager, and that wasn't a teenage show, right? That was an open division,
open contest. Open show, right?
Yeah.
I didn't do very well. I came sixth in Mr. Missouri and third in St. Louis or something like that.
How did you feel like when you got up there? Did you feel like you had any potential for bodybuilding? Or
I didn't know. I couldn't see myself.
Yeah.
I never knew what I looked like. So, but George thought I could compete. So George said, I can do it. I can do it.
Yeah.
And I was just very disappointed that I lost. And that's when it really hit me. I got to go to California.
Hmm.
I'm never going to be a bodybuilder. I gave you, you know, Muscle Beach.
Yeah. Was it the magazines that really got you out there? Was that the influence? Joe Weider's Muscle Magazine?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And watching, like I said, watching those guys on television. Yeah. I knew they all lived in California.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles. So, yeah, it's, you know, George trained a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Know, Dave Dupree. No. John, what was his name? One of the America 77, Dave Johns.
Dave Johns, yeah. Ken right. Waller, too, right?
Ken Waller, yeah.
Yeah, before he went to California.
Right. I was supposed to look up Kenny Waller when I got to California.
Right, right.
I won't tell you what happened the day I told George I was leaving. Oh, man, that was a that was a battle.
Yeah. So George basically just didn't think you were going to make it out there, right?
No. Yes and no, because about an hour later, he came over and he says, well, if you're going to go out there, go look up Kenny Waller down at Gold's Gym in Venice. That's okay. What he said. Maybe he can help you. So, yeah. I think he didn't want to lose me. He didn't want me to go.
Yeah.
He knew if I was going to make it, I had to go.
And how old were you when you went out there, Tony?
19
years old, yeah.
Yes, one way ticket. There's no return trip.
So you had a friend, and you talked him into going with you. And
yes.
And you guys just took a bus, right? And either one of you had over $100, right?
No, I had $75.
$75.
He had $100.
Yeah.
And he was down. His money's running out. He called his mother and says, I can't do this. And we never got out of downtown. We were still stuck in downtown L.A.
Right. So when you went there, you didn't go to the beach and the gym. You just went to downtown L.A. because you didn't know better.
Cannot explain why we didn't get on a bus and just go anywhere. Because we stuck downtown.
Right.
And he goes, we never made it to the beach.
I'm like, where's the palm trees? Where's the girls?
Hey, where's the beautiful girls you were talking about?
Right.
So what happened was, this is another one of those moments that you could not, you know, create. After 10, 12 days, I got on I said, the next bus that comes by, this is the bus I'm going to take. And I'm just going to ride it wherever it takes me.
Okay.
I've never been to California. I got on the right bus. What are the chances? At that moment, at that time, at that clock,
right.
I got on the right bus. It took me to Beverly Hills. And when I got off the bus, another moment happened. To give some of the book away, the kid sitting on the bench, like he was, to me, it felt like he was waiting for me to arrive. He said, you work out? I go, yeah, I work out. And he says, well, you need to be down in Muscle Beach. So he gives me directions. So that's how I got to the beach.
Wow.
It was him I sitting in the bus stop in Beverly Hills.
Jeez, unbelievable.
It was a surreal moment.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like he was waiting, at this big afro, it was so cool, California. And he goes, man, you work out. Yeah, I work out. So, yeah. So those little moments, I go, how could this possibly be? I could have been a day earlier. It could have been 15
right,
minutes.
Right.
Right. Well, I could have, the bus could have taken me to Compton. It could have taken me to.
Right, right. To exactly.
Unbelievable. No, it took me to Beverly Hills.
So what was it like when you went to Gold's Gym the first time, the very first time you walked? This is the original Gold's Gym. This is the very first one.
Pacific Avenue. I walked into the original Gold's Gym, and I was just in awe.
Yeah.
Because Joe Weider was there taking photos with Frank Zane.
Wow.
Then I saw Manny Perry. I saw Robbie Robinson. I saw Bill Grant, Bill Pettis, all the Denny Gable. The list goes on. Kenny Waller. They were all there.
Was this like 76, Tony?
Yes, 76. And it had to be August or September because it seemed like they were training for something.
Yeah, all the big shows in the fall, yeah.
Because no one was talking. There was no conversation. All you hear was weights clinking together. I mean, these guys were serious.
Yeah.
All of this stone face, mean, sweating, and training. And I just went and sat in the corner, staring at them. But in the back of my mind, I'm going, I could look like that if I worked hard enough.
Yeah.
If I were to dedicate myself, I believe I could someday.
Mm-hmm.
Worked hard enough. And I didn't, no one spoke to me. I didn't say anything. Then the owner of the gym, the manager says, what are you sitting in the corner? Get over here. So you're not throwing me out of the gym. I got thrown out of the Gold Gym maybe 3 times.
Wow.
They paid for the membership.
Right. And George told you to look up Ken Waller, but you said he was so intimidating, right? You didn't want to.
Yes, I mean, very intimidating.
Yeah.
He, you know, back, you weighed 240 back in those days. That's big.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was a big dude. He was a mean-looking guy.
Yes. So I wouldn't go near. I just said, no way. I'm not going to even speak to the man. He was doing squats, and his legs was massive. His chest was like this. He was the biggest guy at the gym that day.
Wow. Yeah.
He really was. He was sitting on a stool between sets, and he just had that look, don't come near me. So that's how that ended. So I went, ended up at Muscle Beach. It was $3 a day. No, $3 for the week.
$3 for the week. Wow. What was Muscle Beach like back then? That had to be a totally different than it is now.
It was heaven. It was paradise. It was, the weight pit was filled with guys who had potential. A lot of guys like myself and Steve Barden, Charles Glass. There's a name came out from the Muscle Beach.
Wow.
Even to win that, you had to be something. And then to win Mr. Los Angeles, a lot of guys turned pro coming from winning Mr. Los Angeles. You had to go through all these steps, the LA, the Junior Cal, Mr. California, and then Junior USA, Junior Mr. America. You had to win all these shows before you could think about turning pro.
Yeah, it was like a hierarchy.
Yes, you have to. But you have to win.
Yeah.
And then you have to become Mr. America. Then maybe now you can turn pro.
Right.
So you've beaten everybody.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I went through all the ranks.
Tell me what it was like when you first moved out there. You got $75. You got no job. You did nothing set up. You don't know anybody out there. So, like, what happened? How did you survive? How did you finally, like, stay out there?
I went to this I went to this company looking for a job. Went to the unemployment office.
Okay.
I was on food stamps for a while. Yeah, proud to say.
Yeah.
And I had a little
Were you ever homeless at any time, Tony?
Excuse me?
Were you ever homeless, or did you always have a place to live?
I was homeless. I was sleeping behind a church in Santa Monica.
Wow. Unbelievable.
You read the story.
Yeah.
Behind the church in Santa Monica. And I met some guys at the beach, and it says, okay, we're doing security. They got me a job.
Okay.
Working security. So I work a lot of nightclubs and concerts, and that's how most bodybuilders live. They work night shift and go in throughout the day.
But no time did you ever think, that's it, this didn't work out, I'm going home.
Oh, no. I was not going back.
Because it was do or die.
It's a do or die situation. It was one way. It took me 10 years to go back, only because George invited me to come back.
Yeah.
I guess. And I haven't been back since. So 1976 until now, I've been back once.
Wow, no kidding.
I was determined to go away.
Yeah.
I was running. You know, I was running from a lot of things, too.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a bodybuilder, and I was dreaming about being a champion. But I was running from my childhood, 2,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't run.
Yeah.
Guess what? It follows you.
Right.
It's still in your head.
Yeah.
Can't escape it. But
So you're training at Muscle Beach, and you meet some other guys out there, and you know you're consistently training, and you're obviously improving your physique. And what eventually got you into competing again out in California?
Well, I'm sure you probably know Arnold discovered me.
Yeah, let's talk about that. That was amazing. This was another seminal moment in your life, right?
One of those moments.
Yeah.
So I'm working out one day, we're doing squats and crazy, and he came over to me. I didn't see him. I was talking to my buddies outside the fence. And then, and all their faces was like, everyone was like frozen, looking behind me. And I go, what the hell's wrong with these guys? So I turn around and Arnold standing in front of me.
Yeah.
So yeah, he took me through a workout. So we did chest and triceps. I go, why did he train chest and triceps? Because I was weak there.
Oh, okay.
I had a good bicep. I didn't have a tricep.
Okay.
He sent me to Joe Weider, and that's another whole story we'll talk about. And but that moment, I knew I wanted to be a bodybuilder. I mean, 100%. Everything I did was surrounded, and nothing else mattered. So
because,
I would
because you met because you met Arnold.
Yes, and he said I could do it. He said, you're going to be a great champion someday, and that stayed in my head.
Yeah.
I had a lot of critics at the time, but his voice spoke above them. I said, okay.
Yeah.
He said, I can do it. I can do it.
Yeah.
I'm telling people I was going to do it. Then I said, I'm going to win. Nothing's going to stop me from winning.
Yeah.
I wasn't being cocky, but you got to believe in yourself.
Yeah, you got to have that inner belief.
If you don't, no one's going to believe you.
Yeah.
So whatever it takes in the gym that I need to do, That's what I would do. If I fall dead, drop dead on the gym floor, it's okay.
Right. that says a lot about Arnold that he took the time to motivate a guy like you who had no name. No, you were just a kid.
Yes.
And he just saw the potential, and he stopped, and he actually took you through a workout, and then he recommended that you go see Joe Weider and all and be in the magazine.
I wrote down the address and everything, so tell Joe I sent you and do the article for the magazine, put you in the magazine.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, my God, you're 19. I'm going to get a magazine. So I go to see Joe, and Joe looks at me up and down. Arnold sent you here, he says. Well, I didn't read about that.
Right, right.
Yeah, so they wrote the article, but it took 2 years before it was published.
Wow.
So it sat in the office for 2 years. They finally put it in the magazine. So it's a long story. So
yeah.
But that was a defining moment, because if he didn't say you could be a champion someday, I don't think I would ever take it serious enough.
Yeah.
Or work hard enough.
Yeah.
I was so with the training.
Yeah.
When he said it, I knew it.
Right. That's amazing. So you did the what contest did you do out there, Tony? The Mr. Venice Beach, the one they do on the beach?
Right.
Yeah.
Which was a deal. It wasn't like it was a tough competitor in Mr. Venice Beach.
Right, yeah. I mean, guys like you said, Charles Glass, he was in that before, right? And John Brown was in it.
John Brown was in it, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few other guys that used to write for some of the magazines was actually in that contest.
Okay.
So there was no easy win.
Yeah.
Then I won the Junior Mr. Los Angeles, then I won the Mr. Los Angeles, Mr. South, Southern California, stuff like that. But you're trying to build a name for yourself.
How was your physique looking at that time?
Maybe weighing about 165, 170.
Wow.
But I was extremely cut.
Yeah.
Super definition. My waist was very small.
And you probably had the big back and everything. All that was starting to develop.
Yes, because George had me doing Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 sets of 10 pull-ups.
Wow. So did he just have you doing squats and pull-ups? That was your whole workout?
Basically, that was it.
Wow.
And he goes, don't do anything else unless I tell you. Okay, George.
Yeah, George is stuck with the basics.
Yes, but I had this wide back, but I didn't have the thickness yet. It was wide. I know the thickness came when I started training with Bill Grant and Robbie Robinson, and then doing a lot of T-bar rows and dips. That's when you get the thickness.
Now, were you still training at Muscle Beach at this time, or had you gone to Gold's by now?
No, I won all the beach stuff, and then Mr. Los Angeles was 70, Junior was 77. 78, I made it to Gold's Gym. 77, 78, I was at Gold's Gym.
All right.
And Kent didn't charge me. You know Kent King.
Kent King, yeah. So they had a new manager now, and he took
just go work out. You know? I could see you. When I was eating tuna fish and coffee, he threw me out of the gym as well.
because you had very little money. So I read that about you. I remember, Tony, when you were, in the 70s, that you used to eat tuna fish out of the can and stuff.
Hey, and water. And you're sneaking up the gym. Get out of here.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Gold's Gym in the late 70s. That had to be an amazing time to be at Gold's Gym.
It was unbelievable. I mean, I look back and go, wow, all the great champions were there. I mean, Robbie was the king of the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was and he was winning most of the shows. Mike Mincer was there, and Danny Petillo was there. You name it. Manny Perry was there. Tom Platz was there.
Wow.
Ron Tufel was there. I mean, they're all with Andreas Collins was there.
Yeah.
Dave Draper was there.
Wow. I mean, really?
Yeah. You were in the middle of all of these guys, but I didn't have any titles. Who was I? Nobody.
Yeah.
Just a kid in 1977 looking at the pros like, oh my God, every day.
Right. And what was your mindset at the time? Did you think, I'm going to be like these guys? I'm going to train hard and I'm going to get there? Or?
Yes and no. I mean, you don't know.
Yeah.
Just don't know. You want to compete. You want to win.
Yeah.
You train as hard as you can. But, the first time I competed on the national show, I got beat up pretty bad.
What was that? What show was that?
1977 Junior Mr. USA.
Okay.
I got beat up pretty bad. I came in third in my class.
Okay. That's not bad, though. I mean, that's not real low.
Yeah, but I'm going home going, I can't do this.
Yeah,
so
really.
Yeah, I said, this is impossible. On the national level, I can't beat those guys. Those guys are...
Yeah, right.
And I got really discouraged, very depressed, very out of it. But then 78, I just went home to start training harder.
Hmm.
Just start training till you puke, throw up, cramp up, fall down. Who cares?
Yeah.
Just get up and keep moving. So, you know, those days you had to train. You get about 40 seconds to 1 minute rest between sets.
Jeez, wow.
You're squatting 400 pounds. You got 5 plates on the T-bar. You're supersetting leg press for standing lunges. You're doing some crazy stuff, but you still get 40 seconds.
Wow, that's so unbelievable. Did everybody train like that? I know Robbie trained real fast, right?
Yes, and I trained with Robbie. I trained with Bill Grant. Okay. So that enjoyed training me that way.
Really?
I was conditioned when I got there.
Yeah.
So that's all I knew. So no, there's no 2 minute rest between sets. What am I serving, champagne here? No.
Right.
This is training.
Yeah.
So you're so out of breath, you're gasping for air. You cannot catch your breath because the set's on you now. It's on you. They just look at you.
Yeah. Yeah, but right. Right.
You're up.
Right.
There's no conversation.
So the way you really developed your physique was you were training heavy weights, but yeah, very high intensity because the rest periods were so low.
Yes. In order for the body to grow, it must reach that level of intensity that you feel like you're going to die.
Yeah.
You got to get to that level. And that's shocking your nervous system. That's shocking the muscles. You're forcing the muscles to grow.
Right.
You can't baby your way through. You can't sleepwalk through. I mean, you have to go in and really push yourself beyond that limit.
Yeah.
You know, there's very few guys can go past that pain barrier.
Mm-hmm.
To the pain that most people put the weights down, no, that's when you enjoy yourself. You go through the pain.
Yeah.
To the muscles are numb.
Yeah.
You don't feel it anymore.
Wow.
Now you grow. That's when you grow. That's what I was taught.
What was your diet like back then, Tony? Because I know you had a real fast metabolism. And
I didn't have any money, and before the Miss America contest, you read about this, what I was living on was tuna and water.
Hmm.
Yeah. I remember in bed the last 6 weeks, 7 weeks, and I could feel my stomach and my backbones connecting like this.
Jeez, wow.
Hungry. Starving, lying in bed.
Yeah.
There's no money. There's no food.
Yeah.
Still managed to work out. Because as a child, I grew up not eating.
Yeah.
And I worked out chopping down trees. So
right. So you were brought up this way, yeah. It wasn't anything new to you.
No. But I remember my stomach just flat. I mean, you're so hungry.
Yeah.
Every night. So my condition, I was in pretty good shape.
Is that around the time you learned how to do the vacuum pose?
No, I was working one of my concert, jobs. I had my suit and tie on. I'm standing there, and all of a sudden, my stomach disappeared. I go, what the hell was that? The music's playing. There's 20,000 people screaming their heads. So I go, what is that? I grabbed my stomach. My stomach was gone. I pulled it up. I did a vacuum pose without even knowing it.
Really?
No one taught me. It just.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my first time doing a vacuum pose.
No kidding.
Yes.
Almost happened by accident.
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw Frank Zane do it. No one ever taught me how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just happened. And I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's one of your signature poses for sure.
Yes. I stole a lot of poses from a lot of guys. Of course, Frank and Robbie and even Arnold. But I kind of put my little twist to it.
Yeah.
Like a unique, like the back and spin crush.
Yeah.
And Frank just stands straight on and pulls it up.
Yeah.
What is amazing about Frank Zane and vacuum pose, and most people don't know how he's able to contract his pecs and his lats and then the muscles as he's doing the vacuum at the same time.
Right.
It's impossible.
Wow.
It took me a couple of years ago. That's what Frank's doing.
Huh. Wow.
Oh, man. How do you pull that off?
Yeah.
I got a really good vacuum, but to be able to hit the pecs and the lats at the same time.
Yeah.
Raising through the pecs, contracting the lats, and the vacuum. Incredible.
Yeah, you're right, because you could see when he was doing it, his chest was flexed, his lats were really flared out.
Yes, impossible.
Yeah, and he had that incredible serratus pose, as you mentioned.
Yes, but doing the vacuum. You know, when you're doing this pose, you're not breathing at all.
Right.
Because your stomach is up.
Right.
So yeah, that's really, really unique.
Yeah. So 1978, that was really your turnaround year. That's the year when, you know, you finally came into your own in bodybuilding. Did it start that year with the California, the Mr. California contest?
Yes, where I got beat up pretty bad. I think I won my class.
Yeah, you won the...
Ron Tufa won.
Right, Ron Tufa won the overall. So Ron was heavily favored to win the America that year because he had been in it, I think, the 2 years before that. And he was a young competitor, too, but really, really great bodybuilder.
Yes, 21, 22 years old. Yes. Right. We trained at the same gym. I would see him at the gym.
Yeah.
Opposite side of the gym.
Right.
So, yeah, he was a favorite to win. And
he was a pretty strong, intense trainer, too, right?
Yes, very intense, very strong, and very cut.
Yeah, very thick guy, too. Short and thick.
Thick, yes.
Yeah.
My physique is more line of New Braid, more refined and
small
bones. You know, he was just beef.
Yeah.
But very cut.
So then you go to the Junior USA next. That was the first big national show of the year, and you win the whole thing.
Right, I won that one, yes.
Yeah.
And then I won the Junior Miss America. And then leading up to the Mr. America, but Ron Tuma had just won Mr. USA.
Okay, so you win the Junior USA, you win the Junior America, Tufa wins the California, and then he wins the USA. So right. Now you guys are going to the America, and it looks like it's going to be between you two, right?
No, he was totally favorite.
Totally favorite, okay.
Yes.
How was the feeling about, like, what were people saying about you? Because you won two big national shows, Junior USA, Junior America, in a row.
Not a lot of press.
No. Nobody was impressed with that, huh?
No, there was no press about it. There was no. I didn't read anything that said I was favorite.
Yeah. Well, I lived in Chicago when I was a kid, and I remember the Junior America, I think, because you beat Mario Nieves, who was from Chicago. He was like a real favorite bodybuilder from there, you know?
Yes, I remember I remember him. Yes,
yeah. And he was a top bodybuilder. He was winning a lot of. He was winning his class in some national level shows. So when you beat him, I was like, "Wow, who's this new guy?" You know.
Right. No, I just went in the show and just hoped to win. But mm-hmm. I tried to outwork the guy. You know, posing meant a lot in those days. You can outpose the guy.
Okay.
Who's fighting the hardest at putting the pose down?
Yeah.
This was actually would score that.
So by this point, you were a pretty good poser.
I was a pretty good poser.
Yeah.
I won my class. And then Manu Perry won the tall class. And Tufa won the short. So.
And in your class, you had some good competition in your class, right? You had Larry Jackson, Richard Baldwin.
Yes. Yes, some really good guys.
I'm looking at the list here now. There was like 20 guys in that class, so that was tough.
Right. So you're right. Oh, you got the list.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I'm cheating.
Okay, yeah. It was a tough class.
Yeah.
Medium height class is always a tough class.
Yeah, yes.
Most men are medium height.
Right.
I'm 5'8".
Yeah.
So
tell me what happened, because you talk about this a little bit in your book also, when you did your routine during the night show.
Which I didn't know exactly. You only had 1 minute.
Okay.
And so I'm posing and the MC going, "Thank you, Tony Pearson." And he repeated it. I'm going, "I'm not stop posing. I'm going to continue to pose." I wanted to finish my routine, and it was 2 minutes, 45 seconds over.
Okay.
I did not stop posing. They closed the curtain. When the curtains reopened, I was still hitting my shots. It's my routine.
All right.
So I kind of got the crowd on my side, but it wasn't planned. It wasn't, but I just wanted to finish the routine.
Yeah.
My one chance, one shot, this is it. So when the curtains opened, the crowd went insane.
Really?
And before that, I didn't hear them. I was so focused on what I needed to do. I was in my own head. I didn't hear the crowd, but then they went crazy. So.
And you're like, now this time you're 21 years old. You said you're about 180, right?
Yes. Yes. I was very cut.
Yeah.
Posing was pretty good. And then in the pose down, I'm sure you know about the pose down.
Yeah, this was a famous pose down for sure. 1978 Mr. America. You, Ron Tufa. Manny Perry was a little off that year. He was a little smooth, right? So it was really between you and Tufa.
Right. So there's a lot of pictures from that.
Yeah.
And people can research and see.
Right.
Toe-to-toe, it's like two boxers battling it out there.
Yeah. So basically, Ron was showing his calves because he thought he had better calves than you.
And yes.
You were showing your legs.
Legs were really cut. Deep cuts. I'm going, legs, and he's going, no, calves. And so the most muscular pose.
Were you guys talking on stage?
No, it was just fighting it out, just battling it out. I mean, you're so tired, you just want to just collapse on the floor.
Right.
But no, you got to keep fighting.
Yeah, and you kept hitting that most muscular over and over.
Yeah, and I kept hitting the back poses and the turn to the most muscular shots. Yes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Hitting the ab shots, hitting the vacuum shots.
Right.
So, yeah, just trying to outwork the guy.
Yeah, right.
Not forever. It was a long post out, at least 5 or 10 minutes.
Right.
It was a very long post out.
Jeez, that is a long post out. Usually it lasts a minute nowadays.
Right. Yeah. But the crowd's going crazy. The packed house. I mean, these are hardcore fans. They love the guy at the time.
Right.
And then when they call my name, because normally you're third place, I'm thinking. They called the third place guy first.
Oh, okay.
I forgot I just won my class. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm in third place, I said to myself. That's when you see the picture of my face. I'm like.
Yeah, you're like looking up. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm third. And Ron's over here. I heard him doing something, but I didn't know what he was doing. He was hitting himself upside the head. He was going like this, saying a few bad words.
Yeah.
And then Magna Perry was looking at me. And then I finally realized, I won.
You're Mr. America.
Yeah. But because I wanted to win, but you never know if you're going to win or not. Ron Tuba's the favorite.
Right.
So what are my chances of winning? So when he said third, Tony Pearson, I go, I must be third. Okay. Where's my third place trophy? That's what I'm thinking about. I didn't know he's going to call the winner and only the winner.
Right.
Because when in a competition, that's just how young I was and how naive I was.
Wow.
When they say, they call your name, that means you're third place. Then they call second, and the winner is?
Right.
Right. And I was exhausted. I was just completely done, naive, don't know what the hell's going on.
So what'd you feel when you finally dawned on you that you're Mr. America?
There's no feeling to express that. It's just so excited. Like, oh, my God, yes.
And Tufel got so mad, he actually walked off stage.
Oh, yes. It was a long exhibition, yes.
Yeah.
He was saying some bad words pretty loudly.
Yeah. What was the reaction of the crowd? Because it was such an upset.
It was a mix of both, boos and cheers.
Yeah.
It was just a rumble.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I also want to thank Jeff King for coming out of retirement, so to speak, and doing the interview. Nobody's heard from Jeff in a long time. And I wanted to thank his friend, Larry Bernstein, who I knew from Chicago. And Larry was the one who contacted Jeff. And I think both Larry and Jeff won their class at the 1983 Mr. America. And then Jeff, of course, went on to win the overall, becoming one of the most popular Mr. America winners ever. All right. So are we ready for Jeff King's article? It's called Jeff King, Mr. America Tells How He Did It. It's written by Bob Green, and this was in the July 1984 issue of Iron Man magazine. This is the old Iron Man magazine that was published by Perry and Mabel Rader. So it reads, it's not often you get to approach an athlete with obvious star qualities and give an interview with him or her. And it's even luckier to get one with somebody who's won two of the most important bodybuilding titles and hasn't even nicked the surface of his potential. I haven't had the opportunity to fully interview Jeff King in person, but I connected with him over the phone while he was presently in England on tour giving exhibitions, seminars, and television interviews. We chatted for a while after he just returned from a show on the BBC One. England only has 4 TV stations. So here I am getting one of the rare interviews I do over the phone, 90% I do in person, from a kid who's on an unbelievable schedule as he's washing off the TV makeup at the Brunel Health Spa in Swindon, England. He didn't drop a stitch and has a very cheery outlook with a very friendly, personable demeanor. In short, the guy is on and very determined, but he doesn't come off like he's a jerk. When he returned in April from Mike Glass's Southern California Bodybuilding Classic, I'll get more details on his personal approach to training as to the details and philosophy, as well as some of the little tricks and awarenesses he employs. Even though he is hereditarily disposed, he still has had some training problems and hurdles to overcome. We can all learn a little something from great champions to incorporate into our training and diets. Poor guy, he's been peaking since last May for the AAU Mr. America, which he won, and then he continued right on to the Universe in Europe, which he also won. If that wasn't enough, he got the opportunity to go to England for these shows through the efforts of Bob Leary and Bob Gruskin, and had to keep up the heavy training load for this show coming up in April. Yikes, that's one long peaking session. This brought me to ask Jeff what his basic thoughts were on adapting his nutrition, nutrition being the most important aspect of peaking for a contest or exhibition. Jeff indicated that he basically trained the same all year round, but the dietary changes he made were the key. He said, I usually keep the protein at a steady level to properly feed the tissues. I adjust the carbohydrates according to whether it's off-season training or just before a show. Therefore, he lowers his total calories to cut up, and those calories are made up mainly of carbohydrates. He doesn't sacrifice protein, but he keeps the level constant in accordance with his body weight. Fats are reduced right from day one. They're low anyway, but reduced as much as possible during the entire contest period. Speaking of fats and oils, Jeff mentioned that the stress of traveling, training for these shows, and the time difference was taking its toll on him in other ways. His joints were starting to warn him, his skin was drying out, and his hair was becoming brittle and breaking off. By adding tri-germ oils, which is wheat, soy, and rice, to his diet, the joints are becoming more lubricated, and the skin and hair are improving. He has gone back to the key regimen of supplements he used right up to the Mr. A and Mr. Universe. I'll go into more detail in the next article on them, but he feels the super spectrum he takes, 5 of them at 8 in the morning, and 4 of them at 8 in the evening, plus the tri-min, which is the blood sugar levels and anabolic support, at 8 a.m., 2 in the afternoon, and 8 p.m., made the most difference. These products are advertised on page 73 in this magazine. The 100% absorption of the minerals and trace elements of Super Spectrum have waylaid the problem of the joints so far, but with the added stress Jeff is now undergoing, it may necessitate the addition of a little citrated mineral ascorbates. It's also interesting to note that Jeff felt that the above products were more than just multiple vitamin and mineral supplements, and he really felt the difference. I will endeavor to get the results of his on-the-road nutritional adjustments. At this writing, he was positive and quite enthusiastic. Another point, once Jeff starts his pre-contest diet, there's no turning back and no diet breaks. He obviously has the dedication and understanding of sacrifice a champion needs. He pays attention to the little things while sticking to the general overall program. Jeff King is a thinking man's bodybuilder. Like some of the smarter ones over the years, he cycles his training. That way, some body parts will get hit 3 times 1 week and twice the next. Otherwise, he said that each body part would be worked twice a week if he wasn't hitting it so hard for all the darn contests and shows. He looks at the overall cycle as an 8-day cycle, 3 on and 1 off twice. Then you rest a day and repeat the cycle. Like anyone else, Jeff has hard-to-grow areas. Hard to believe, isn't it? Especially after looking at the photos accompanying this article and some of the other ones that I've started to see hit the magazines. But if you see a bodybuilder in transition from pose to pose or doing exercise shots, you start to see weak points popping up. With Jeff, it's his back. Not enough to lose a contest, but too far from the perfection he seeks. Hence, the entire attention he pays on his back routine. Whereas the chest gets 12 to 13 sets, depending on how he feels, the back work goes as follows. 14 sets for the lats and upper back, and 3 or more sets of deadlifts and or hyperextensions for the lower back. I'm keying off the most important aspects, like the sets, general plan, and outline. How many times in Ironman have you heard requests for sets, reps, and timing of workouts, etc.? So look at these most important points, and you can learn from them. Details are coming. Let's go to the legs. Fabulous legs, supported by mind-blowing 20-inch calves. He blasts for 11 sets on the quads, on a heavy or intense day, 13 sets on a lighter day, lighter meaning less intensity or less weight and more reps. It all depends on how you feel. Remember, some of the earlier champs that had outstanding bodies thought and trained this way. Calves are worked by Old King 3 times a week for 6 to 7 sets. He works his hamstrings for 6 to 8 sets after quads, maybe sometimes with the calves. I don't know if he's heavy or if he supersets or what, but I'll find out. Shoulders are 11 sets, and then we find the arms. Biceps, 8 to 9 sets, and triceps get a little more attention as they should, with 9 to 11 sets. All this may not sound like much, but Jeff has done much more in the past, and now he has it wired in. More for less. Same old intensity thing. But you can only do this once you've worked the various aspects of the muscle, and they have started to respond. Watch out for this guy who seems to have come out of nowhere. He'll be going on to better things, and he has a lot to say. Thanks for reading. All right. So thanks to Bob Green for that article about Jeff King, which appeared in the July 1984 issue of Iron Man magazine. And also, again, thanks to our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, for sponsoring this episode. And also thanks to those who are contributing to the podcast via our Patreon program, which is available on the website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and it's in the upper right-hand corner. If you choose to contribute to the show, I really appreciate it, guys. All right, that is it for our show this week. Next week, we'll be back with part two of our interview with Tony Pearson. See you guys next week. Take care.